Coming up next is Susana Martinez. She's now approaching the podium. She is the first Latina governor in the U.S. and the first female governor of New Mexico. Very popular, big approval ratings. Here is Governor Susana Martinez.
If you haven't done so already, please donate to the Red Cross. To find out more about how you can help those affected by Hurricane Isaac, please visit redcross.org/give. I am Susana Martinez. On behalf of the great state of New Mexico, let me express my gratitude for being invited to speak tonight. Growing up, I never imagined a little girl from a border town could one day become a governor. But this is America. Y en America, todo es posible. My parents taught me to never give up and to always believe that my future could be whatever I dreamt it to be. Success, they taught me, is built on the foundation of courage, hard work, and individual responsibility. Despite what some would have us believe, success is not built on resentment and fear. We grew up on the border and truly lived paycheck to paycheck. My dad was a Golden Gloves boxer in the Marine Corps, then a deputy sheriff. My mom worked as an office assistant. One day, they decided to start a security guard business. I thought they were absolutely crazy. We literally had no savings. But they always believed in the American dream. So, my dad worked to grow the business. My mom did the books at night. And at 18, I guarded the parking lot at the Catholic Church bingos. Now, my dad made sure I could take care of myself. I carried a Smith & Wesson 357 Magnum. Yes, that gun weighed more than I did. My parents grew that small business from one 18-year-old guarding a bingo to more than 125 employees in three states. And sure, there was help along the way, but my parents took the risk. They stood up, and you better believe they built it. My parents also taught me about having the courage to stand for something. So I went to law school, and I became a prosecutor. I took on a specialty that very few choose to pursue. I prosecuted child abuse and child homicide cases. Cases that were truly gut-wrenching. But standing up for those kids, being their voice for justice, was the honor of a lifetime. Sometimes you pay a price for standing up. When I was a young prosecutor, I got called to testify against my boss. I could have backed down, but I didn't. I stood up to him, and he fired me for it. So I took him on, ran against him for district attorney, and beat him by a landslide. I fear some of our leaders today have lost the courage to stand up. That we have now are politicians, They won't offer real plans and only stand up when they want to blame someone else. And I don't say that just because a Democrat is in the White House. I was a Democrat for many years. So were my parents. Before I ran for district attorney, two Republicans invited my husband and me to lunch. And I knew a party switch was exactly what they wanted. So I told Chuck, we'll be polite, enjoy a free lunch, and then say goodbye. But we talked about issues. They never used the words Republican or Democrat, conservative or liberal. We talked about many issues, like welfare. Is it a way of life or a hand up? Talked about size of government. How much should it tax families and small businesses? And when we left that lunch, we got in the car, and I looked over at Chuck and said, I'll be damned, we're Republicans. This election should not be about political parties. Too many Americans are out of work, and our debt is out of control. This election needs to be about those issues, and it is the responsibility of both parties to offer up real solutions and have an honest debate. In New Mexico, I inherited the largest structural deficit in state history, and our legislature is controlled by Democrats. We don't always agree, but we came together in a bipartisan manner and turned that deficit into a surplus. And we did it without raising taxes. But that's not the kind of leadership that we are seeing from President Obama. He promised to bring us all together, to cut unemployment, to pass immigration reform in his first year, and even promised to cut the deficit in half in his first term. Do you remember that? But he hasn't come close. They haven't even passed a budget in Washington, D.C. in 3 years. If he can take credit for government building small businesses, then he can accept responsibility for breaking his promise and adding $5 trillion to the national debt. Because he did build that. As the first Hispanic female governor in the history, little girls, they often come up to me in the grocery store or in the mall. They look and they point. And when they get the courage to come up, they ask, are you Susanna? And they run up and they give me a hug. And I wonder, how do you know who I am? But they do. And these are little girls. It's in moments like these when I'm reminded that we each pave a path. And for me, it's about paving a path for those little girls to follow. They need to know no more barriers. In many ways, Mitt Romney and I are very different. Different starts in life, different paths to leadership, different cultures. But we've each shared in the promise of America. And we share a core belief that the promise of America must be kept for the next generation. El sueño americano es tener éxito. It's success. It is success, and success is the American dream. And that success is not something to be ashamed of or to demonize. There is one candidate in this election who will protect that dream, one leader who will fight hard to keep the promise of America for the next generation. And that's why we must stand up and make Mitt Romney the next president of the United States.
And that was Susana Martinez, the governor of Mexico, New Mexico, giving a rousing speech there. She talked about her parents' bingo business, gave a charming story of her switch from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party, and said that Mitt Romney alone would keep the promise of America. We're going now to the floor of the convention as we wait the speech of Paul Ryan, the vice presidential candidate. Brian Naylor is with the Wisconsin delegation. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Jennifer. You know, I think it's impossible to overstate the excitement in the Wisconsin delegation right now as they await Paul Ryan's arrival on the stage. Excuse me. I'm with Mary Pat Kruger, who is a delegate from Menominee. Do I have that right?
You're correct, yes.
And is it possible? How excited are you folks in Wisconsin about this?
It's very emotional, very excited. We've been excited since early morning. We got to see Paul earlier today at an event, and his wife Jana, and it's electric. I don't know other way to describe it. Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh!
What did he tell you this morning?
Well, he just thanked us all, and we're like a big family in Wisconsin, and we love him, and we're so excited. He's going to be a wonderful vice president.
You feel like Wisconsin is kind of the ground zero of politics this year with all of it.
We're leading the way.
Okay, and we have now Representative Paul Ryan at the podium in Tampa to accept the nomination as vice presidential candidate.
Thank you. Thank you. You guys are great. Thank you so much. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, delegates, and fellow citizens, I am honored by the support of this convention for Vice President of the United States. I accept the duty to help lead our nation out of a jobs crisis and back to prosperity, and I know we can do this. I accept the calling of my generation to give our children the America that was given to us, with opportunity for the young and security for the old. And I know that we are ready. Our nominee is sure ready. His whole life prepared him for this moment, to meet serious challenges in a serious way, without excuses and idle words. After 4 years of getting the runaround, America needs a turnaround, and the man for the job is Governor Mitt Romney. I'm the newcomer to this campaign, so let me share a first impression. I have never seen opponents so silent about their record and so desperate to keep their power. They've run out of ideas. Their moment came and went. Fear and division is all they've got left. With all their attack ads, the president is just throwing away money, and he's pretty experienced at that. You see, some people can't be dragged down by the usual cheap tactics because their character, ability, and plain decency are so obvious. And ladies and gentlemen, that is Mitt Romney. For my part, your nomination is an unexpected turn. It certainly came as news to my family. And I'd like you to meet them. My best friend and wife, Jana, our daughter, Liza, and our boys, Charlie and Sam. The kids are happy to see their grandma, who lives in Florida. There she is, my mom, Betty. My dad, a small-town lawyer, was also named Paul. Until we lost him when I was 16, he was a gentle presence in my life. I'd like to think he'd be proud of me and my sister and brothers. You know what? I'm sure proud of him and where I come from, Janesville, Wisconsin. I live on the same block where I grew up. We belong to the same parish where I was baptized. Janesville is that kind of place. The people of Wisconsin have been good to me. I've tried to live up to their trust. And now, I ask those hardworking men and women and millions like them across America to join our cause and get this country working again. When Governor Romney asked me to join the ticket, I said, let's get this done. And that is exactly what we are going to do. President Barack Obama came to office during an economic crisis, as he has reminded us a time or two. Those are very tough days. And any fair measure of his record has to take that into account. My home state voted for President Obama. When he talked about change, many people liked the sound of it, especially in Janesville, where we were about to lose a major factory. A lot of guys I went to high school with worked at that GM plant. Right there at that plant, candidate Obama said, I believe that if our government is there to support you, this plant will be here for another 100 years. That's what he said in 2008. Well, as it turned out, that plant didn't last another year. It is locked up and empty to this day. And that's how it is in so many towns, where the recovery that was promised is nowhere in sight. Right now, 23 million men and women are struggling to find work. 23 million people, unemployed or underemployed. Nearly 1 in 6 Americans is in poverty. Millions of young Americans have graduated from college during the Obama presidency, ready to use their gifts and get moving in life. Half of them can't find the work they studied for or any work at all. So here's the question. Without a change in leadership, why would the next 4 years be any different from the last 4 years? The first troubling sign came with the stimulus. It was President Obama's first and best shot at fixing the economy. At a time when he got everything he wanted under one-party rule, it cost $831 billion, the largest one-time expenditure ever by our federal government. They went to companies like Solyndra with their gold-plated connections, subsidized jobs, and make-believe markets. The stimulus was a case of political patronage, corporate welfare, and cronyism at their worst. You, the American people of this country, were cut out of the deal. What did taxpayers get out of the Obama stimulus? More debt. That money wasn't just spent and wasted. It was borrowed, spent, and wasted. Maybe the greatest waste of all was time. Here we were, faced with a massive job crisis so deep that if everyone out of work stood in single file, that unemployment line would stretch the length of the entire American continent. You would think that any president, whatever his party, would make job creation and nothing else his first order of economic business. But this president didn't do that. Instead, we got a long, divisive, all-or-nothing attempt to put the federal government in charge of health care. Obamacare comes to more than 2,000 pages of rules, mandates, taxes, fees, and fines that have no place in a free country. That's right. You know what? The president has declared that the debate over government-controlled health care is over. That will come as news to the millions of Americans who will elect Mitt Romney so we can repeal Obamacare. And the biggest, coldest power play of all in Obamacare came at the expense of the elderly. You see, even with all the hidden taxes to pay for the healthcare takeover, even with the new law and new taxes on nearly a million small businesses, the planners in Washington still didn't have enough money. They needed more. They needed hundreds of billions more. So they just took it all away from Medicare. $716 billion funneled out of Medicare by President Obama. An obligation we have to our parents and grandparents is being sacrificed, all to pay for a new entitlement we didn't even ask for. The greatest threat to Medicare is Obamacare, and we're going to stop it. In Congress, when they take out the heavy books and the wall charts about Medicare, my thoughts go back to a house on Garfield Street in Janesville. My wonderful grandma, Janet, had Alzheimer's, and she moved in with Mom and me. Though she felt lost at times, we did all the little things that made her feel loved. We had help from Medicare, and it was there, just like it's there for my mom today. Medicare is a promise, and we will honor it. A Romney-Ryan administration will protect and strengthen Medicare for my mom's generation, for my generation, and for my kids and yours. So our opponents can consider themselves on notice. In this election, on this issue, the usual posturing on the left isn't going to work. Mitt Romney and I know the difference between protecting a program and raiding it. Ladies and gentlemen, our nation needs this debate. We want this debate. We will win this debate. Obamacare, as much as anything else, explains why a presidency that began with such anticipation now comes to such a disappointing close. It began with a financial crisis. It ends with a job crisis. It began with a housing crisis they alone didn't cause. It ends with a housing crisis they didn't correct. It began with a perfect AAA credit rating for the United States. It ends with a downgraded America. It all started off with stirring speeches, Greek columns, the thrill of something new. Now, all that's left is a presidency adrift, surviving on slogans that already seem tired, grasping at a moment that has already passed, like a ship trying to sail on yesterday's wind. You know, President Obama was asked not long ago to reflect on any mistakes he might have made. He said, "Well, I haven't communicated enough." He said his job is to, quote, tell a story to the American people. As if that's the whole problem here? He needs to talk more, and we need to be better listeners? Ladies and gentlemen, these past 4 years, we have suffered no shortage of words in the White House. What is missing is leadership in the White House.
And we're listening to Congressman Paul Ryan, the vice presidential nominee at the Republican National Convention in Tampa.
And the story that Barack Obama does tell, forever shifting blame to the last administration, is getting old. The man assumed office almost 4 years ago. Isn't it about time he assumed responsibility? In this generation, a defining responsibility of government is to steer our nation clear of a debt crisis while there is still time. Back in 2008, candidate Obama called a $10 trillion national debt unpatriotic. Serious talk from what looked like a serious reformer. Yet by his own decisions, President Obama has added more debt than any other president before him, and more than all the troubled governments of Europe combined. One president, one term, $5 trillion in new debt. He created a new bipartisan debt commission. They came back with an urgent report. He thanked them, sent them on their way, and then did exactly nothing. Republicans stepped up with good faith reforms and solutions equal to the problems. How did the president respond? By doing nothing. Nothing except to dodge and demagogue the issue. So here we are, $16 trillion in debt, and still he does nothing. In Europe, massive debts have put entire governments at risk of collapse, and still he does nothing. And all we have heard from this president and his team are attacks on anyone who dares to point out the obvious. They have no answer to this simple reality. We need to stop spending money we don't have. Really simple. Not that hard. My dad used to say to me, "Son, you have a choice. You can be part of the problem, or you can be part of the solution." The present administration has made its choices, and Mitt Romney and I have made ours. Before the math and the momentum overwhelm us all, we are going to solve this nation's economic problems. And I'm going to level with you. We don't have that much time. But if we are serious and smart and we lead, we can do this. After 4 years of government trying to divide up the wealth, we will get America creating wealth again. With tax fairness and regulatory reform, we'll put government back on the side of men and women who create jobs. And the men and women who need jobs. My mom started a small business, and I've seen what it takes. Mom was 50 when my dad died. She got on a bus every weekday for years and rode 40 miles each morning to Madison. She earned a new degree and learned new skills to start her small business. It wasn't just a new livelihood. It was a new life. And it transformed my mom from a widow in grief to a small businesswoman whose happiness wasn't just in the past. Her work gave her hope. It made our family proud. And to this day, my mom is my role model. Behind every small business, there's a story worth knowing. All the corner shops in our towns and cities, the restaurants, cleaners, gyms, hair salons, hardware stores, these didn't come out of nowhere. A lot of heart goes into each one. And if small business people say they made it on their own, all they're saying is that nobody else worked 7 days a week in their place. Nobody showed up in their place to open the door at 5 in the morning. Nobody did their thinking and worrying and sweating for them. After all that work, and in a bad economy, it sure doesn't help to hear from their president that government gets the credit. What they deserve to hear is the truth. Yes, you did build that. We have a plan for a stronger middle class with a goal of generating 12 million new jobs over the next 4 years. In a clean break from the Obama years, and frankly, from the years before this president, we will keep federal spending at 20% of GDP or less, because that is enough. The choice is whether to put hard limits on economic growth or hard limits on the size of government. And we choose to limit government. I learned a good deal about economics and about America from the author of the Reagan tax reforms, the great Jack Kemp. What gave Jack that incredible enthusiasm was his belief in the possibilities of free people, in the power of free enterprise and strong communities to overcome poverty and despair. We need that same optimism right now. And in our dealings with other nations, a Romney-Ryan administration will speak with confidence and clarity. Whenever men and women rise up for their own freedom, they will know that the American president is on their side. Instead of managing American decline, leaving allies to doubt us and adversaries to test us, we will act in the conviction that the United States is still the greatest force for peace and liberty that this world has ever known. President Obama is the kind of politician who puts promises on the record and then calls that the record. But we are 4 years into this presidency. The issue is not the economy that Barack Obama inherited, not the economy that he envisions, but this economy that we are living. College graduates should not have to live out their 20s in their childhood bedrooms, staring up at fading Obama posters and wondering when they can move out and get going with life. Everyone who feels stuck in the Obama economy is right to focus on the here and now. And I hope you understand this too. If you're feeling left out or passed by, you have not failed. Your leaders have failed you. None of us should have to settle for the best this administration offers, a dull, adventureless journey from one entitlement to the next, a government-planned life, a country where everything is free but us. Listen to the way we're already spoken to. Listen to the way we are spoken to already. as if everyone is stuck in some class or station in life, victims of circumstances beyond our control, with the government there to help us cope with our fate. It's the exact opposite of everything I learned growing up in Wisconsin or at college in Ohio. Now, when I was waiting tables, washing dishes, or mowing lawns for money, I never thought of myself as stuck in some station in life. I was on my own path, my own journey, an American journey, where I could think for myself, decide for myself, define happiness for myself. That's what we do in this country. That's the American dream. That's freedom. And I'll take it any day over the supervision and sanctimony of the central planners. By themselves, the failures of one administration are not a mandate for a new administration. A challenger must stand on his own merits. He must be ready and worthy to serve in the office of president. We're a full generation apart, Governor Romney and I, and in some ways we're different. There are the songs on his iPod, which I've heard on the campaign bus, and I've heard it on many hotel elevators. He actually urged me to play some of these songs at campaign rallies. I said, look, I hope it's not a deal breaker, Mitt, but my playlist, it starts with AC/DC and it ends with Zeppelin. Look, a generation apart, but that doesn't matter. It makes us different, but not in any of the things that matter. Mitt Romney and I both grew up in the heartland, and we know what places like Wisconsin and Michigan look like when times are good. We know what these communities look like when times are good, when people are working, when families are doing more than just getting by. And we know it can be that way again. We've had very different careers, mine mainly in public service, his mostly in the private sector. He helped start businesses and turn around failing ones. And by the way, being successful in business, that's a good thing. Mitt has not only succeeded, but he succeeded where others could not. He turned around the Olympics at a time when a great institution was collapsing under the weight of bad management, overspending, and corruption. Sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? He was the Republican governor of a state where almost 9 in 10 legislators are Democrats, and yet he balanced the budget without raising taxes. Unemployment went down, household incomes went up, and Massachusetts under Governor Mitt Romney saw its credit rating upgraded. Mitt and I also go to different churches, but in any church, the best kind of preaching is done by example. And I've been watching that example. The man who will accept your nomination tomorrow is prayerful and faithful and honorable. Not only a defender of marriage, he offers an example of marriage at its best. Not only a fine businessman, he's a fine man, worthy of leading this optimistic and good-hearted country. Our faiths come together in the same moral creed. We believe that in every life there is goodness. For every person there is hope. Each one of us was made for a reason, bearing the image and likeness of the Lord of life.
And we're listening to Congressman Paul Ryan, the vice presidential nominee. This is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention from NPR News.
We have responsibilities, one to another. We do not each face the world alone. And the greatest of all responsibilities is that of the strong to protect the weak. The truest measure of any society is how it treats those who cannot defend or care for themselves. Each of these moral ideas is essential to democratic government, to the rule of law, to life in a humane and decent society. They are the moral creed of our country, as powerful in our time as on the day of America's founding. They are self-evident and unchanging. And sometimes, even presidents need reminding that our rights come from nature and God and not from government. The founding generation secured those rights for us. And in every generation since, the best among us have defended our freedoms. They are protecting us right now. We honor them and all of our veterans, and we thank them. The right that makes all the difference now is the right to choose our own leaders. And you are entitled to the clearest possible choice, because the time for choosing is drawing near. So here is our pledge. We will not duck the tough issues. We will lead. We will not spend the next 4 years blaming others. We will take responsibility. We will not try to replace our founding principles. We will reapply our founding principles. The work ahead will be hard. These times demand the best of all of us. All of us, but we can do this. We can do this. Together, we can do this. We can get this country working again. We can get this economy growing again. We can make the safety net safe again. We can do this. Whatever your political party, let's come together for the sake of our country. Join Mitt Romney and me. Let's give this effort everything we have. Let's see this thing all the way through. Let's get this done. Thank you, and God bless you all. Thank you.
And that is an enthusiastically received Paul Ryan. He is the vice presidential nominee, Mitt Romney's running mate, taking the big stage tonight in what's probably the first time many Americans saw him. He said that the Democrats have run out of ideas. He accused Mr. Obama of failing to live up to his promise of change, criticized his economic policies, calling his stimulus corporate welfare. And now his family is joining him on stage, his wife Jana and his three children. There's Liza, Charlie, and Sam giving him hugs. Paul Ryan brought up multiple standing ovations during his speech tonight. You can hear the crowd chanting him there. He said the greatest threat to Medicare is Obamacare, and we're going to stop it. He said that Republicans will take on the debt. Oh, he's got his mother up there as well. He told a very touching story about how his mother started her own business after Paul Ryan's father died, and he said that my mom is my role model. Paul Ryan there leaving the stage. We have Brian Naylor on the floor in Tampa. I think you're with the Wisconsin delegation there, Brian.
Hi, Jennifer. Yeah, I am. We're listening to Led Zeppelin. I just thought I'd throw that in there, a tune off of Paul Ryan's iPod, no doubt. Yeah, it's a very crazily enthusiastic Wisconsin delegation, and people just, you know, a woman was wiping a tear from her eye after he spoke. People are just so excited about what he means to the state.
And
I just want
Brian Naylor from NPR. I just want to get your thoughts about what you just saw.
Completely amazed at Paul. He's a great man, a great humanitarian, and a powerful man.
Do you think he is going to put Wisconsin in the Democrats' column in November?
No, I hope he puts it in the Republicans' column.
You're right.
But nice try.
Let's try that again.
Yeah.
It's been a long day. It's been a reliably Democratic state for many years.
It has.
Trying again. And you think that he's going to be able to change that?
I really believe he is. And I'm a small business owner, and between Scott and Paul, they're changing Wisconsin. They're changing this country.
Scott Walker, the governor.
Scott Walker.
Jennifer, back up to you.
Okay, thanks so much, Brian Naylor. With me from Tampa now again, NPR's Ron Elving and Mara Liasson, as well as E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Brookings Institution, and here with me in Studio 38, Matt Continenti of The Washington Free Beacon. First, guys, let's get a quick first impression. How did Paul Ryan do on this very important night? Mara Liasson.
Well, I think he did great. This was the single most effective speech that we've heard so far. It was a very worthy debut of someone who a lot of Republicans feel is going to run for president, is going to be the real inheritor to the mantle of Jack Kemp and maybe even Ronald Reagan. I thought he did a great job. You know, he made the argument about Medicare, used all the Republican-approved adjectives, strengthen and protected for our mom's generation and for our kids. I thought he sold Mitt Romney. He wasn't shy about singing his praises like some of the other speakers have been. He connected Catholicism and Mormonism, said that their faiths come together in the same moral creed, and I'm particularly interested in what EJ has to say about that amazing paragraph where he said, the greatest of all responsibilities is that of the strong to protect the weak. We have responsibilities to one another. We do not each face the world alone. I think he really kind of tried to marry, you know, Catholic social commitment to a small government libertarian conservatism. And that was some feat.
All right, EJ Dionne.
Well, I think just on that particular phrase, the phrasing is very good. And the difficulty is there was not anything specific, and it's not at all clear to me. Well, let me put it more bluntly. The Ryan budget does almost exactly the opposite of that. I think the Republicans may have made a big mistake tonight in putting Condoleezza Rice out there before Paul Ryan. I, for one, thought that Rice really outshined Ryan tonight, that her speech sounded more presidential. Now, granted, Rice didn't have to carry any water as a member of the Republican ticket. She didn't need to use all those attack lines. But I really thought she looked quite impressive compared to him. The other thing I'd say is there were moments in Ryan's speech where he just chose to leave things out. For example, he said that of the president, he created a bipartisan debt commission. They came back with an urgent report. He thanked them, sent them on their way, and then did exactly nothing. Somehow there was not a word on the fact that he himself was a member of the commission, that he voted against the report. And so I don't know. I found the speech less inspiring. Maybe it's not designed to inspire me.
Matt Continenti.
Than Mara did.
Matt Continenti.
I was thinking about the point of view from a Republican audience. This was one. Got
here
well,
I am.
Well, but Matt Continenti was not ahead at EJ's point.
You know, I agree with EJ. I think that there was a kind of a rhetoric deflator going on at the Republican convention. With last night we had Ann Romney, and then Chris Christie's speech didn't really quite live up to her. Tonight we had these back-to-back, I thought, fantastic speeches from Condi Rice and Susana Martinez. And then we shifted gears to Ryan's good speech, but I think the speech tried to do far too much. It was covering all these different bases. If there's a breakout star here, it's Martinez. I think if anybody, she represents where the party may be headed down the road decades hence, you know, not just in this election.
Ron Elving, quick take from you.
Let's bring it back to 2012, just for one second. I think there's one reason why this Paul Ryan speech was, as Mara said, perhaps the most effective of the convention. And that is that everything about the convention has been constructed for that to happen. Everything about tonight was bring out one also-ran, one possible candidate, somebody who was almost on the short list to be vice president after another, and have them all kind of fall short, have them all give truncated speeches focused down just on trade or just on one other issue, building up to the moment when Paul Ryan, the winner, the American beauty rose, if you will, produced by trimming and pruning all these others, could blossom at the top of the stem. The only interruption there, as has been suggested, was that they brought out Condi Rice, who was tonight's featured woman, and she was great. She really hit the ball out of the park, especially for her fans. And she connected them back to the Republican past and to national security in ways no one else has done, including John McCain, who tried earlier this evening. So there was that kind of confusion. But in the end, the point of this whole convention for the first 2 days was to build up to Paul Ryan, and Paul Ryan laid the stage perfectly for Mitt Romney. I think they're achieving what they want to do in the hall. Whether or not they're getting through to the national audience of independents they want to reach is another question.
All right. Thanks, Ron Elving. We're going to go back to the floor there in Tampa where we hear another band on stage. We have NPR's Jeff Brady. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there. I'm standing here with Representative Cory Gardner. He represents the 4th Congressional District in Colorado, unseated a Democrat in 2010, running for re-election now. And during Paul Ryan's speech, I looked over. He said something like this. He said, "Freedom, I'll take any day over the supervision and sanctimony of central planners." And I saw you say, "Wow."
You know, this is the new generation taking the stage tonight, giving a very bold speech about a vision for America that hasn't existed the past 4 years. Somebody who truly believes in the value of each individual citizen of this country. Not the value that government puts in them, but the values that we bring to the government. The idea that we can rise above where we are today and always do better for ourselves than we are.
Now, I know you're probably a fan of good lines. Were there any lines in there you thought, oh, I wish I would have said that?
Yeah, you know, he had a line in there about college students. You know, we shouldn't have 20-year-olds looking out the window of their parents' home looking for a better economy. He had some great ways to say it. You know, this really was the new generation of this country, the generation that's been waiting in the wings for so long to get out and actually share a positive vision, and certainly willing to challenge the powers that be, saying that the past 4 years have failed, and we're here to reconcile that with the American people.
Colorado, a state that has been sort of swinging around a little bit here lately, went for Barack Obama in 2008. Where are things looking now?
I think Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan are looking very strong in Colorado right now. You know, Colorado's always been a state that's voted for the people that they believe to be right. It's not a state that's been beholden to a Republican Party or to a Democrat Party, but it's a state that wants to do what's right for the next generation. And I'm here tonight with our 9-month-old son, and I can't wait to 4 years from now to be back and watch the renomination of Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney as our presidential vice presidential ticket.
The key in Colorado is always those unaffiliated voters, a third of the electorate there. Is this a ticket that can really appeal to unaffiliated voters?
You know, absolutely. Colorado is a state of entrepreneurs, of innovators. The attacks that the president has pursued over the past several months has been at the very core of the Colorado belief when it comes to businesses, when it comes to rising them, you know, lifting their families to the next opportunity. And so I think what you're seeing here is, once again, a statement, a very strong statement, made by Paul Ryan about how this Mitt Romney ticket is going to be better for America.
All right, thank you. That is Representative Cory Gardner from the 4th Congressional District in Colorado, holding his son who is out cold. He is sleeping hard. Thank you, guys, and back up to you.
All right, thanks so much, Jeff Brady. And now we have NPR's Ari Shapiro, who has been traveling with the Romney campaign. He joins us from the NPR booth at the RNC. Couldn't sleep if he wanted to. Hi, Ari.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
Good. So Paul Ryan's debut speech to a national stage here, what kind of reaction are you hearing?
You know, it struck me that what we heard was very, very similar to what he delivers on the stump every day when he's out there campaigning with or without Mitt Romney, and you saw why audiences on the campaign trail get so excited about him. What struck me was the sections that were different from his typical stump speech I thought were very notable. First of all, he emphasized his youth a lot more than he typically does on the stump. There was the line about, my playlist starts at AC/DC and ends at Led Zeppelin, and then the line that the gentleman on the floor just mentioned about 20-year-olds shouldn't be staring up at their faded Obama posters, wondering when they're going to move out of their parents' houses. He was really embracing the fact that he, at 42 years old, is the age of Mitt Romney's oldest son, really playing to a different kind of audience than he's been playing to on the Republican campaign trail. And the other section that was really new from when he's campaigning in the past was the section about Mitt Romney's religion, something that the campaign has more or less avoided talking about until now, and he seemed to be opening the door to talking about it in a different way.
He would be, at 42, the youngest vice president in a couple decades and the first from the post-baby boomer generation. Do you see a different audience on the trail with Paul Ryan on the ticket, and is there a lot of enthusiasm for him out in the hustings?
It's not necessarily a different audience. It is definitely a different enthusiasm. I remember one rally in Pittsburgh where the music started playing, and it was, we're not going to take it. And Paul Ryan came out waving a bright yellow terrible towel from the Pittsburgh Steelers football team over his head. And I sat there in the audience and thought to myself, this is something Mitt Romney could never get away with doing. He would look unnatural doing it. Paul Ryan looks natural doing it. The audience loves it when he does it. And it's why he brings something to the ticket that Mitt Romney really needed and lacked on his own.
All right.
Of course, the flip side of that is that Paul Ryan risks upstaging Mitt Romney in some ways, as Sarah Palin did John McCain 4 years ago.
Well, and we can quarterback tomorrow night and see how Mitt Romney does and compare them. NPR's Ari Shapiro, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we're back with our round of analysts here, Ron Elving, Mara Liasson, Matt Continetti, and E.J. Dionne. We heard several times accusations of, criticisms of Mr. Obama's lack of experience. Is that a viable tactic against an incumbent? Ron Elving.
It does seem an unusual one, but I think that the general feeling of all the speeches we've heard, and to some degree Paul Ryan's speech was a distillation of a speech we've been hearing from different speakers for the last 2 days. The distillation essentially says, this man should never have been president. He was an accident. We were in a tough spot in 2008, and the Bush administration was failing, and anyone the Democrats nominated would have gotten the job, and they nominated a guy who had no experience really in politics. He had never run anything. He'd never run a business. And so now we're just going to correct that little mistake that we made 4 years ago and sweep this fellow aside. That has been the assessment of Barack Obama throughout this convention. We heard it again in Paul Ryan's speech tonight. He is lightly regarded. He is thought of as a person who really only got in the White House by historical accident.
Matt Continetti, you were remarking earlier that we've heard a lot of rhetoric but little substance. Did that change with Paul Ryan?
I thought of the speeches we've heard so far, Ryan's was actually the most policy oriented. I mean, now that's not saying much. He didn't get into much level of detail, but he did like specifically go through, no, this is what was wrong with the stimulus in our view. This is what was wrong with Obamacare in our view. He then went to a very high level abstraction. I think this is the first time I've heard the phrase central planners in a political convention. It's as though Friedrich Hayek wrote the speech himself. Whether that carries to independence, I'm not sure. It was policy as it goes. But I very much agree with Ron's analysis, which is that the line that really struck out to me yesterday from Chris Christie was, he goes, well, you know, there's plenty of blame to go around. What's important is what we're going forward. And I think that's the philosophy of the Republicans now. Let's not talk about what happened before Obama. Let's just focus on what happened with Obama and how we can improve things now.
All right. E.J. Dionne, we're going to have to give you a very quick, brief last word here.
Well, I could go through and fact check a whole lot of things about the stimulus, about their argument about Medicare that just isn't true. I will give him this. I like the line that his iPod goes from AC/DC to Zeppelin. And the one political point he made that was probably helpful is when he said, Mitt Romney and I go to different churches, but in any church, the best kind of preaching is done by example. That was clearly designed to reassure Christians, but he didn't win me over, I got to say.
All right. Well, check in again tomorrow night with all of you. This is NPR News, and you've been listening to live coverage of the Republican National Convention from Tampa. Tomorrow, Governor Mitt Romney takes the stage, and we will be here. Join us. I'm Jennifer Ludden. This is Republican National Convention live coverage from NPR News.